All right. Good morning, church. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. Wow. I need to pause for hydration. I was in the back there just jumping and dancing and crying slash almost crying almost four times. I feel so honored. I love how everything has just been centered around Jesus. And I feel so honored to be able to talk about him today. So the title of today's lesson is Jesus is not a brain surgeon, just in case you didn't know. But what does a brain surgeon do? They fix things. Like any other doctor, they fix things. But they fix very complicated things. Very complicated things that when I looked it up, I'm like, I don't even have the vocabulary to understand what I'm reading. But sometimes we treat Jesus like a brain surgeon, like he should just come in and fix all of our problems or fix all the complicated things in our life and just kind of do everything for us, take care of anything for us. And sometimes it's really nice to have someone come in and just fix everything. And sometimes some of us even like to come in and just fix everything. I mean, who here knows someone who just likes to come in here and just kind of fix everything? Nothing is done the right way. Who knows someone like that? Come on, like, you can't do anything right. Husbands, you know what I'm talking about. Raise your hand, set yourself free. But let's open up to Revelations chapter 5. And we're going to talk about perhaps a better way to look at Jesus, rather than just looking at him as a simple fixer-upper. Because at times we do want a quick fix. We want a quick fix for our family, maybe our marriage, our job, our school. Sometimes we just want the problem to be over with. And we want Jesus to be the fixer-upper of it. But, and my first point is, but Jesus cannot fix the problem when Jesus is the solution. So in Revelation chapter 5, it says, "Then I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll with writing on both sides and sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming in a loud voice, 'Who is worthy to break the seals and open the scroll?' But no one in heaven on earth or under the earth could open the scroll or look inside of it. I wept because no one was found who was worthy to open the scroll or look inside. Then one of the elders said to me, 'Look, do not weep. See, the Lion of Judah, the Root of David, has triumphed. He is able to open the scroll.'" He is able to open the scrolls. And today I don't want to get into the beautiful imagery that Revelation presents with the scrolls and with the elders and with the angels. Instead, I want to focus on the only one who is worthy of opening the scroll. You know, it says that the writer of Revelation was weeping. Weeping because no one could open the scroll. Weeping because there was no solution. Sometimes we can weep over the problems in this world. We weep when we lose hope. We weep when we look at something and we say, there's no solution. I think one of the saddest things I've seen over the past couple of years is people weep over politics. In reality, we say the way the political climate is going, and some people have wept over the decisions, over the people that have been chosen into power, like they're the solution. Like they're gonna fix the problem. Well, there is a solution. And if you've lost hope for whatever's going on in this world, if you've lost hope for what's going on in your life, Jesus is the solution. He is the powerful Lion. The only one worthy is the Lion. Your significant other isn't worthy. Your work isn't worthy. Your politician isn't worthy. So let's not treat these things like they are worthy. Let's not talk about them like they are the solution. Jesus is the only solution. So the question is, how do we apply this solution? My second point, if you're writing this down, is we need to be loving the lion, but living as lambs. In verse 6, it says, "Then I saw the lamb looking as if it had been slain, standing at the center of the throne, encircled by the four living creatures and the elders. The lamb had seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth." He went and he took the scroll from the right hand of he who was on the throne. And when he had taken it, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the lamb. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy. You are worthy to take this scroll. You are worthy to open the seals because you were slain. And with your blood purchased for God's person, from every tribe, every language, and every nation." It's funny because right off the bat in Revelation 5, when they start portraying Jesus in this book, Jesus is portrayed as a lion. But here he is seen as a fallen lamb. And when we want Jesus to come in the hard times, ask yourself, do you want the lion or the lamb? Because yes, we conquer through the blood of Jesus. But it's his example of laying down his life that we need to follow in order to conquer. I love the song, "This is Amazing Grace," because we stop and we sing, "Worthy is the Lamb." And you know what? Interestingly enough, the rest of Revelation, Jesus is never described as a lion. But almost every time, is described as the lamb. And the lion is a lot easier. Trust me on this. I remember I was out in Iceland this summer. And, you know, I went and I climbed a mountain. Because when you want to get close to Jesus, you just go climb a mountain. At least that's what I thought. So I climbed this mountain in search for Jesus. In search for God. I climbed this mountain on this spiritual quest. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm a little ADD, especially when it comes to hiking, which is why I should never hike alone. I was hiking alone, but I was on the trail. But I was on the trail, and all of a sudden, I saw a stream and a little waterfall. And I thought, wow, God has made this waterfall. I wonder where it's coming from. And so I got off the trail and started following up the waterfall. This lasted about 2 hours. The stream would get wider and smaller, and I would just go up, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I'm just praising God for all of this stuff, for the waterfall, for where it's coming, for my lack of understanding. I'm like, why does it get smaller and then bigger? Where is all that water coming from? It was just mesmerizing, praising God. And then I was like, oh, no, the waterfall is attacking me. And I realized water was coming down from the sky. That's called rain. The rain was attacking me. And I was like, it's okay. I have a rain jacket. I put that hood up. I was ready. I was on a mission. Remember, it's a spiritual quest to find Jesus. And so I'm heading up this mountain, and the rains are getting a little harder. The winds are getting a little stronger. I realized that the water was coming from a geothermal pit of boiling sulfur water. Which if you did some research before you went to Iceland, which would have been me, you realize that when you're probably near one of those spots, that quite possibly the ground under you could be extremely not thick, which is soft, which means if I took one wrong step, my foot would go into boiling sulfur water, my flesh would be instantly eaten up, and I would probably die out there because nobody knew I was there. I started crying at this point, as you can all imagine, terrified for my life, asking God, why am I up here? And it was funny, it got real existential real quick. It was kind of weird. Why am I here? Why? I'm searching for you, and then this happens. Are you abandoning me, God? I feel abandoned. And then all of my abandonment issues started coming up. And I started going through, and I said, all right, God. You know, there was this time I was abandoned. What about the time when I was thrown in the middle of a shower and almost choked to death? What about the numerous times I've been assaulted and people have stood by and have done nothing? Where were you in that, God? And so I said, God, speak to me. I eventually found the top of the mountain and I stood up and it was like dousing rain. I was soaked. I had waterproof everything and I was still soaked. The rain was coming down. The wind was blowing. I thought I was going to fall off the mountain because I stupidly went on like this small rock on the top of the mountain looking over the cliff. And I'm just like, God, say something. Speak over the wind. Speak over the rains. I want the lion. And I listened and I waited for God's voice and nothing happened. And then I started compromising. I'm like, all right, God, if you're there, stop the wind. Stop the rain. And it just blew harder. And the rains came down stronger. And then I started arguing with God. I'm like, do you really want me to believe in you right now? Because you're making it really hard for me to believe in you right now. Aren't you supposed to do this for me? And I was there, and I was praying through it. And at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm giving up. No wonder you left me before. This is why I gave up before. And I started walking down that mountain. I was angry. And I just stopped. I looked back. And I said, God, you say that I am your adopted son. You say that you love me as a child. Well, what good father watches his child get hurt and does nothing? Who does that? And I started walking along. And God said, what about Jesus? What about when he was on the cross and I got down on my knees? The moment that I look to in my life, the moment I preach about, the moment I am honored and the moment I am most grateful for when Jesus died on the cross was a moment when God had to step back and do nothing as his one and only son was being hurt. And it taught me that God doesn't abandon me when he leaves us and when he gets hurt. But it taught me another thing, that God glorifies us when we lay down our lives. That God glorifies us when we are being stepped on. Because worthy is the Lamb. And then after that, I got a few feet down and then God was like, and where were you when I made this mountain? Kind of had my Job moment of like, and so you're going to tell me what to do about the winds and the rains? I'm like, oh, God, I got it. But Jesus stepped aside and laid down his life for us. He was worthy because he was slain. Pause for hydration. We can't have the lion without the lamb. Sometimes we want the lion all the time. And Jesus is the lion. I'm sorry, I thought there was the picture of that big lion. But Jesus is the lion. And we want power, and we want prestige, and we want to be better, perfect, maybe unhindered by our past. These can be the lions we seek in our own life to overcome, to accomplish. And we end up picking and choosing the lions that we want. And then when we look at Jesus, we end up just picking and choosing what we want in Jesus. We accept the call of the lion, but we ignore the call to imitate him as the lamb. See, Jesus does not want to withhold the lion from your life, but you can't get there without first laying down your life as the lamb. Not without opening yourself up for people to step on you, to hurt you, to make you bleed emotionally because you have sacrificed your own life, your own trust, your own security, your own walls for their sake. Why is Jesus portrayed as the lion who can open up the scroll? Because he lived as the sacrificial lamb. This is the amazing grace that we are talking about. This radical act of love, a love we're called to imitate. And who here would say it's good to love? Nobody's raising their hand. I'm like, oh. It's good to love. Maybe you're even here and you don't even believe in God, but you say you believe in love. Or we think, oh man, our church, we just need to love more. I need to love more. And I would agree with you guys. But I want to challenge you on what love is, on what the idea of love is. So let's look at what Jesus says about it. In John 13:34, it says, "A new command I give you. Love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another." So, Jesus is clear about this. We're called to love. And the question is, how do we love this way? In John 15, in verse 12, it says this. "My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friend." Scripture confirms it. What is the answer to how we love? How God will be glorified? How do we win the world for Jesus? How do we finish the race that we strive for? The answer is the same. We lay down our lives for God, for each other. You know, some of you probably have some friends you'd say, I would take a bullet for. I'd take a bullet for this friend. But that means more than actually taking a bullet. You might never, ever take a bullet. You might never take a bullet for them. But it implies so much more. It implies you're there with them during the hard times. It implies that you give them the benefit of the doubt. It implies that you would go out of their way to do something for them. It implies that if they were, your best friends were getting engaged and they wanted to do it over a dock and some fishermen didn't want to leave the dock, that you would be willing to shell out $50 just to get them to move. Not that that's ever happened to me, but by the way, I don't get what all the hype is about fishing in that case. I might offend some people with that, but laying down our life. Sometimes we do ridiculous things. And what Jesus did and what Jesus calls us to imitate, because he says, love one another as I have loved you. And what did Jesus did? How did he love? He laid down his life for everyone. He said, I'm taking a bullet for everyone. So no, don't just take a bullet for your friends. Don't just take a bullet for your spouse. Take a bullet for your boss. Take a bullet for your professors. Take a bullet for your enemies. Take a bullet for your abusers. That's what Jesus did. It's hard. It's challenging. And it's got to start here. We got to lay down our lives here. Jesus calls us to die to ourselves daily. And he, again, as the sacrificial lamb, he is worthy to say this. You know, laying down your life is how we make other disciples. That's what John 13 said. If you love one another as I have loved you, how do we love? Laying down our lives. You know, if we lay down our lives continually, if we die to ourselves continually, it becomes a lifestyle thing. You see, sharing our faith, talking about Jesus, getting with other people, encouraging others doesn't become something that we do. It becomes something that we are. Like Saren said, we don't come to church. We are the church. And my fear in preaching a message like this is you'll just say, good message, move on. I feel good. I want you guys to lay down your lives for each other. It is terrifying. It's scary because you have to trust the other people in this room. And what do other people do? They let you down. So instead of trusting the other people in this room, trust the God who put these people in this room for you. Trust the God who says that we need to lay down our lives for each other. Jesus did, and it was cup hard for Jesus. As Ben read in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was like, Father, please take this cup away from me. This is scary. It's okay to be scared. You know, I've jumped out of planes. I've snorkeled in glacier melt water. I've bungee jumped into crazy things. Crazy, scary, adrenaline pumping things. But you know what's more scary than all of that? Moving to a new place and trying to make new friends. And it has been a challenge for me to open up. There's been a couple of people when I say, hey, I want to build a friendship. Let's get together. And, you know, maybe we get together and there's no follow-up or it's hard to get together. And I'm like, walls. If you're not going to fight for me, let me step away because that just means you might hurt me. Everybody's going to do that, so soon I'm going to be walled up from everyone. But I'm scared because maybe if I open my heart, I might get hurt. Maybe if I open my life, someone will take advantage of me. But Jesus calls us to be the sacrificial lamb. We are most like Jesus in the midst of our suffering. And it's hard. It's hard to trust people. It's hard to trust God. It's hard to let your walls down. But this is the poison that Satan fills in the church. Is this lack of trust and lack of serving. You know, in the campus, we tend to have a ride shortage situation. And so I was asking one of our wonderful sisters, hey, what's one of the needs do you think that's here? They said, oh, cars. You know, we need to give each other more rides. And, you know, I might be guilty of avoiding that because, you know, gas money and it's just a pain in the butt sometimes. I just asked, you know, okay, if we couldn't have rides, would we all spiritually die? No. What's the need? And she said something really profound. She said, well, I guess we don't really need rides to get people from point A to point B. I think we need all of each other in our life to get each other from point A to point B. And that's more terrifying, more exhausting, more taxing than driving an hour to pick somebody up. But it's what Jesus did. It's how Jesus changed the world. It's the reason why we're here now. Because Jesus laid down his life in that way, and we need to do the same for others. If you are not doing life with people, if you're not involved, if you're not laying, you can't think of anyone you're laying down your life for in practice, not just I'd say I'd take a bullet for, and not just your spouse. Jesus did things in community. Because Ephesians 3 says that God made his manifest wisdom apparent to us through his church. Look, I am not an image of Jesus. But I do believe I have some Jesus-like qualities. None of you are the image of Jesus. But all of you have Jesus-like qualities. That's why when we come together, we can show who Jesus is. When we do life together, we can show who Jesus is. When we lay down our life because we are not Jesus and we are not strong enough to take care of ourselves. But if we lay down our life for each other and we're constantly taking care of each other, then we can do it. It's just like Halloween. If like two people gave out candy, Halloween would suck. But you can come out with like 800 pieces of candy because everyone has bought into it. Buy into laying down your life for the people in this room. You know, laying down our life is not brain surgery. You're wondering where that was going to come back in. But I mean, can't you imagine a world where we lay down our lives for each other every day? That sounds awesome. That's the solution right there. And it's not exactly, when it comes to laying down our life, it's not like this is going to get us the most money. This is not the thing that's going to move you ahead in your position, your job. It's definitely not the thing that's going to just fill all those immediate gratification desires that you have. I mean, it's not exactly brain surgery, is it?
Glad you could make it. Can I get you a drink?
Yeah, something soft. I'm driving. Parking's an absolute nightmare around here, isn't it? I have to reverse into the tiniest of spaces. Still, I managed it. I mean, parking's not exactly brain surgery, is it? And I should know.
Why is that? Are you a doctor?
Careful. Not a doctor. I'm a brain surgeon. Big difference. Big difference. Yeah, I actually know a joke about this. What's the difference between a doctor and a brain surgeon? One's not exactly brain surgery. The other is brain surgery. What do you guys do?
I'm an accountant.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I could do with an accountant. Filling in those tax forms can get really confusing, can't it? Still, it's not exactly brain surgery, is it? I mean, brain surgery, believe me, is very complex. Are you an accountant too?
No, I work for a charity.
Oh, that's a very selfless job, isn't it? I really admire you. I don't think I could ever do what you do. I say that because it's emotionally draining, not because it's hard. I mean, it's not exactly brain surgery, is it? Which, as a brain surgeon, is what I do.
Lionel, here's your drink. Lionel's a brain surgeon, you know.
Yeah, he mentioned it.
Oh, Jeff, they keep you late at the Space Centre.
As always.
This food round. Have you met Lionel?
No, hello, Lionel.
So, Jeff, how do you earn a crust?
I'm a scientist. I work mainly with rockets. It's pretty tough work. What do you do?
Why? I don't mean to boast, but I'm a brain surgeon.
Brain surgery? Not exactly rocket science, is it?
Well, it's not exactly brain surgery. But yeah, John, sure, the lamb is fine, but it's not exactly the lion. Sure, laying down your life for people around you is good, but it's not exactly convenient for my schedule. Oh yeah, loving people is great and all, but the last time I let someone in, I got hurt, so no. And sure, I should find joy in suffering, but it's not exactly the happiness I want. And of course, I should show grace to those who make me mad or hurt me or disagree with me. But it's not what they deserve. Sure, I should show love and compassion. But I don't really like these people. Stop compromising. Yes, laying down your life for others and for God is terrifying and hard and emotionally draining and not the flashiest thing that you can do. But that's not the point. Scripture is clear. We need each other to spiritually survive. John 13 says it best. This is how we glorify Jesus. if we refuse to lay down our lives for each other, to get involved with each other, and to do life together, if you're refusing to do those things, you are compromising on the man or woman that God wants you to be. At the end of the day, it's our decision whether we lie down for the sake of others or not. So my question for you is, who are you lying with? Revelation 11, it says, "Then I looked and heard the voice of many angels numbering thousands upon thousands and tens of thousands times 10,000. They encircled the throne and the living creatures and the elders. In a loud voice, they were saying, 'Worthy is the Lamb who is slain. Worthy is the Lamb who is slain to receive power, wealth, wisdom, strength, honor, glory, and praise.'" My question for you guys is, what do you desire? Do you desire the wealth and power and glory that this world offers through our jobs, through our family, through what other people think? Or do you desire the Lamb of Jesus? You see, laying down our life is the big time thing. It's the rocket science that humbles the brain surgery. It's what life to the full means. It's what brings us into communion with God and with each other. And why thousands and thousands and tens upon thousands of angels are singing, "He is worthy," because Jesus laid down his life. Do you want power? Do you want wealth or wisdom? Maybe prestige, honor, respect? Do you want your fellow man to praise you? Do you want God to glorify you? Is that what you want? Is that really what you want? If so, this is what it looks like. "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. Glory, honor, power, prestige, strength, wisdom, praise." This is what that looks like. It's not being the top dog. It's not having everybody serve you. It's not having your comfortable life. We are impacted and changed because of what Jesus did. Let us do the same for each other. People are crying out. They might hurt you. They might push you away. But they are crying out for you to do this for them. And you're crying out for that too. And we keep saying you first. But Jesus already went first. 2,000 years ago, there is no you first because Jesus already did it. If you're looking for someone to lay down your life, look back at Jesus. Look at what he did and imitate him. Follow him. Don't follow how the people of this world, don't follow the ideas of this world. When people hurt you and dictate your decisions, you are following, you are laying down with the world. When you look to the promises that sin provides for you, you are lying down with the prostitutes of this world. Don't lie down with the prostitutes of this world or what it has to offer. Lie down alongside the Lamb. This is true power. This is what is worthy. And as we reflect on King Jesus, we will worship our God by following the same example of the thousands and thousands and thousands of angels by crying out, "Worthy is the Lamb who is slain."